The lines in the sand have been drawn. Will anyone cross it in this continuing saga between LSU and Will Wade? Meanwhile, on the court, the Arkansas Razorbacks are done as the Florida Gators beat the Hogs 66-50, meaning tomorrow at noon, it'll be the Tigers and the Gators part three. The first two went into overtime. We'll talk about the LSU Tigers on the court with John Brady. We'll also talk NFL free agency. Drew Brees restructures his contract, freeing up some money. And the Schwab joins us to talk about all things NFL. A busy day today, Thursday, March 14th, 2019.
And he hits this one deep out in the right field. This has got a chance to get out of here, and it does. Antoine Duplantis with his fifth home run of the season, and the Tigers are up 2-0.
Satoransky, top of the arc, trailing Bradley Beal well beyond the arc for three. It's there! Oh, it's there! Bradley Beal! A closer three, 94-84, Wizards on top. Beal now with 23 points.
Quinzo to Deion. Deion, quick release. Got it to go, a two-pointer. Deion Waiters. Waiters now with 11, and Coach Dwayne Casey wants to call a timeout. Things going good for Miami. Their largest lead up by 23. 6:27 left to go in our third. Pistons yet to score.
And a great good afternoon and welcome. Yes, indeed. Florida, the eighth seed, defeats ninth-seeded Arkansas. Just finished in the SEC tournament, 66-50. Keontae Johnson leading the way for the Gators with 20 points and 12 rebounds, setting up part three, LSU, Florida, this time in the SEC tournament. Good afternoon and welcome. CD back in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media and 103.7 The Game. Yours truly here, Studio 1A, and the saga continues. Will Wade and LSU. Let's go over some things. Will Wade was indefinitely suspended by LSU last Friday after declining to meet with LSU and NCAA officials after several reports that we all know about. Wade said he declined to meet with LSU because his counsel advised him not to submit to a joint interview with LSU and the NCAA. LSU came out with a statement yesterday. The timing for Wade is completely up to Will. We want him as our coach. If Will decides to come talk to us today, then that door is open. We welcome that conversation. Then Will Wade came out with a text to some media members that was also, I believe, emailed by his attorney, Mr. McGovern, to F. King Alexander, Joe Oliva, and LSU Board of Supervisors. Here is the Will Wade full statement. This morning, I advised President Alexander, Athletic Director Joe Oliva, and the LSU Board of Supervisors that I would like to resume my duties as head basketball coach. Last week, when the university decided to place me on administrative leave, I accepted the decision without complaint, as I knew that they wanted time to reflect on the flurry of media reports. With the benefit of a week to consider the circumstances, I believe university officials should allow me to resume my duties. I understand that in today's hyper-intense media environment, it is extremely difficult for any organization, particularly a public university, to stand firm in the face of rumors, leaks, and innuendo. In this case, the simple truth is I have been placed on leave because I exercised my right not to submit to a joint LSU-NCAA interview on the exact same subject matter at issue in an impending federal criminal trial in New York. My legal counsel advised the university that it would be wholly inappropriate for me or anyone to submit to an interview under these circumstances. Declining to be interviewed was a difficult decision for me, as I would like to cooperate fully with all parties, particularly LSU. To be clear, however, all I've done is follow the prudent advice of counsel to exercise my constitutional rights to due process. Given these facts, I don't believe it is appropriate for me to be relieved of my duties. We have a great basketball program made up of excellent student athletes and quality coaches. The players who've given their all for this institution, the students and alumni who are devoted to LSU, and fans all across Louisiana and beyond deserve to see this team fulfill its destiny. I love LSU and everything it stands for. What I'm asking for is the right to do my job while exercising my constitutional rights. I don't think that's too much to ask. Well, LSU responded. Tom Skinner, the school's general counsel. In everything that's been said by Will and his folks in the past week, not once have they denied any wrongdoing. As a university and employer, we need to hear our employee say, I didn't do anything wrong, or explain the circumstances, or admit he did do something wrong. We've been unable to get to that point. We have no choice. Here's the big one. In terms of institutional control, to not suspend someone. That is the clincher, the institutional control. Skinner went on to say, again, Coach Will Wade has yet to deny any wrongdoing to us or publicly. Absent that, the university is in a very difficult position with regard to compliance with NCAA requirements. And until Coach Wade talks to university administration about this, he remains suspended. There is a standing offer for him and his attorneys to meet with LSU officials. Those two words, institutional control, are the most important part of that statement. When the NCAA determines that schools lack institutional control over a situation, heavy sanctions can be imposed and investigations can be opened up throughout the athletic department. And that is something that LSU cannot and will not allow. And the NCAA is in town. They've interviewed Javonte Smart. Still no ruling on him at this point in time. LSU's drawn their line in the sand. Will Wade's drawn his line in the sand. Will Wade will not be coaching for LSU anytime soon, if ever again. And I can promise you, LSU, really, they care about their fan base, but they care about their university more than anything else. And I don't think they're at all happy with this situation. I don't think Will Wade's at all happy with this situation. And I don't think there's ever going to be a resolution between the two. I don't. Ross Dellinger is the person that spoke with LSU, with Sports Illustrated. Ross Dellinger will join us next here on the continuing saga of LSU basketball on the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game. 1037thegame.com.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 1037 The Game.
Well, this continuing saga of LSU, Will Wade, the basketball program, the NCAA, the FBI continues. And as we said earlier in the program, Will Wade says he should be allowed to coach even if he refuses to sit down to discuss things with LSU. Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated, when this text was sent out to university officials, got a response from the LSU officials, and Ross joins us now. Deli, how are you, my friend?
Good. How are you, Jordy?
I'm terrific. So Will Wade and his attorneys, I'm sure, sent out an email to LSU officials. Will Wade sent out a text to some local media members and yourself. I've talked about it. Kind of put it in a nutshell what that text said, in the Cliff Note version.
Well, it said that LSU is pretty frustrated, by Will Wade not speaking, and is probably even more frustrated now that he released, a statement that is kind of calling out LSU. Mm-hmm. So it's not good right now. It's all playing out in on the public stage, and you could see both sides of the story. There are two sides here. A lot of lawyers would tell you that Will Wade is getting good advice and doesn't need to speak to LSU about this federal case. Like, there is that side. I think some people at LSU even agree, hey, if I was his attorney, I'd be telling him the same thing. Like, right. I think that is one side of it. The other side is LSU as an employer, when your employee doesn't speak to you and lawyers up about a serious situation that can impact the employer later on, your hands are kind of tied. And especially with the NCAA in town, you've got to show you've got control over your institution. Right. That's a big thing here. It's institutional control. So LSU felt its hands are tied and they needed to make a move, whether that's firing or suspension or something. And they decided to go the latter route for now.
Ross Dellinger with us. According to Thomas Skinner, he told you Coach Will Wade has yet to deny any wrongdoing to us or publicly. NCAA is in town. They want to meet with Will Wade. The LSU wants the NCAA present, and that's not going to happen. So Will Wade's not going to be coaching throughout this SEC tournament and throughout the NCAA tournament because he's not subpoenaed till the 22nd of April. The basketball season ends April 8th. Here's where I think, and you tell me if I'm far off base here. I'm not saying things would be different, but I don't think the public would be as venomous as they are. Why did LSU have to suspend him prior to the Vanderbilt game? Why not let him coach that game and then afterwards say, hey, Will, we got to talk. We let you cut down the nets and all, but now we have to talk. But that public forum where the outcry was so venomous and so bad, I think that forced LSU into that just was a bad scene. Does that make any sense?
Well, yeah. In hindsight, after seeing the environment of that game, maybe they would have gone back on that decision. I don't know. But I can tell you that Friday morning when Will was supposed to meet with Joe Oliva and others, Board of Supervisors members and F. King, when he canceled, at that point in the NCAA, keep in mind, is in town and frying around, and they want to be in on all these investigations and all these interviews. When that happens on Friday morning, I think LSU thought they had to take swift action, especially with the NCAA lingering around. Later on Friday, they interviewed Javonte Smart, and the NCAA did with LSU officials. So they did that on Friday. They got that knocked out. And they're going to conclude that investigation, by the way, either today or tomorrow. And it sounds like he's on the path to be reinstated. So there's kind of that element of this whole deal. I think they wanted Will to just cooperate like Javonte did, and it didn't happen. And they thought they had to take swift action to show again that they're in control right. of their institution.
I understand. No one individual is bigger than the entire program. And if the institutional control comes into play, then you can open up the door to every program in that athletic department. And LSU certainly doesn't want that. I wonder what the public outcry is going to be if, and I think they are as well, going to reinstate Javonte Smart. In other words, they're going to say, well, we didn't find anything. And Will Wade's going to go, well, I told you, you're not going to find anything. Why not me?
I think the simple reaction to that is Javonte cooperated and spoke to us, and you did not. That's kind of a simple, that's the thing. Will coming in and just denying everything probably would put him back on the court. you know, I mean, that's basically what Javonte's situation
right.
is.
Right.
All these people they're interviewing for the Javonte case are, I'm sure, you know, denying any wrongdoing. If Will would do the same, I think they put him back on the court. And that makes you wonder why Will's not doing the same.
Exactly.
Why isn't he coming in and denying everything? Well, he was caught on an FBI wiretap. So mm-hmm. if there's more of those, which most think there are more tapes and more recordings of phone conversations, then Will could be getting himself into real trouble if he lies on the record.
Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. Look, everybody's lawyering up, and we don't know what these attorneys are doing behind the scenes. Have they talked to the FBI? Are they trying to get some immunity for more information? Because Will Waite's not the one. He wasn't called to be subpoenaed by the FBI. He's been called by the defense. So, we don't know what's going on, right? I mean, there's no telling what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, in this case, it's still ongoing. I mean, the FBI is still investigating. This is an ongoing case, and LSU's asked the FBI for help, but they're not gonna give them anything because it is an ongoing investigation. And that's one thing, you know, Will Wade's attorneys have said, this is an ongoing situation and we're not going to talk until it is complete. We're definitely not at the end of this whole scandal, and it might not end even in late April when that next
That's
trial
right.
is, you know, this might go on for a while.
How is this? I don't remember all the specifics, but Bruce Pearl at Auburn was kind of caught with his hand in the cookie jar a little bit. He refused to cooperate, and he still was able to play. Is there any similarities between the two?
There's a little similarity there. You know, the difference there, and I kind of dug into this yesterday a little bit because it was something that was has been compared to here. The real big difference there is Bruce Pearl wasn't the man on the tape. His assistant was. So
right,
he wasn't
right.
the guy that was the main target. And, you know, a lot of assistants around the nation have been suspended or fired. You haven't seen a lot of head coaches directly involved. I mean, obviously, Rick Pitino wasn't. He stepped down or was fired. But you haven't seen a lot of head coaches. And so that's the big difference with the Pearl deal, because I called around to some Auburn beat writers who covered that last year, and that's what they said. You know, the big difference is, and also there's this, maybe Bruce Pearl didn't meet with school officials, but from what I understand from talking to those reporters, he spoke to them, he conversed with them at least by phone or email
okay.
or whatever. So there was some talk, but the big difference is Bruce wasn't in the crosshairs. He wasn't the man on the phone sort of thing.
And from what you've found or heard, there has not been any dialogue whatsoever. Will Wade didn't pick up the phone and call Joe Oliva at any point in time?
Outside of Friday morning, him
yeah.
potentially calling Joe, I don't know for a fact, but I would guess he called Joe or something and said, my lawyer said, I can't talk, I can't meet, I'm sorry, you know, whatever. Outside of that, I don't think he's spoken to anybody, any leader at the university, from what I understand.
I know LSU. I've been around a long time. I've got to believe that what transpired today with that text from Will Wade to media members, they had to be caught a little off guard. I don't think they're very happy with this, and I think their patience is running a little thin. Would that be a fair assessment?
Oh yeah, I think that's very accurate. I think they were kind of blindsided today by Wade's statement. They did not at all expect that. They did not at all last Friday expect him to kind of
yeah.
shut down completely. They really did. They were trying. I know they tried to convince him out of that, to talk to them. You know, yesterday they met with the Advocate editorial board to basically offer the coach a public, you know, ultimatum. Like, you got to talk or you're not being reinstated.
Right.
So I don't think it's just coincidence that Wade's statement came out a day after they went and then the Advocate published all that stuff. But they certainly weren't expecting what happened today. There's no doubt as you can imagine, they're not happy with it. And as you said, their patience is starting to run dry.
There's such a perception nationally about LSU and even locally that when the pressure's on, man, they just make they just make poor decisions. Like I said earlier, I mean, why suspend him? Why even call for a meeting? Just let him play that game and then talk to him. I don't, you know, then you get the home game out of the way. Now every other game is going to be played on the road, and it just cuts out the public scrutiny. Are other universities this messed up, it seems like? I mean, it seems like LSU always handles things in a way that's less than the proper way to handle things.
Yeah, it doesn't always feel that way. It does. And you know, they know that. I think there are people at LSU who realize that there's a problem with the perception and the handling of situations like mm-hmm. this, and they try to fix it. They've hired a couple people, they've moved some people around, they've done some things to try to fix it. But this is a tough one here because of things like this morning. You know, the coach, he's a 36-year-old guy. I don't know what kind of reasoning, or I don't know what kind of advice some people gave him to release something like that, calling out his own employer. Yeah. That is odd, and it's something that is tough for the school to kind of look good or rebound from, I guess. I mean, it's tough for the coach to do the same. So yeah, we're heading to an end here. That's probably gonna see LSU and Will Wade not together any longer.
And I'm just curious how long the man who is falling on the sword on all this, Mr. Oliva, will last as well. I don't know. I'm not here to point fingers or to make decisions like that, but I just kind of wonder. Ross, great job, man. Thanks for providing us with the information. All Will Wade has to do is go meet with him, and if he can lie to the moon to LSU, but that's not going to behoove him. And this is a bad situation, and I agree with you. A bad ending is forthcoming sooner rather than later. Thank you, my friend. Stay busy, stay healthy, stay safe.
All right, man. Thanks, Jordy.
All right, take care. That's Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated. They've drawn their lines in the sand, and nobody's budging. Again, let's just play basketball. The heck with all this other stuff. Let's go watch a really good basketball team play. And with that in mind, we'll go on the court and talk between the white lines. John Brady joins us next from Nashville.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Welcome back. This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. And, you know, we've talked ad nauseum about the stuff off the court. I'd much rather talk about the stuff on the court. And LSU will open up SEC tournament play on Friday at 12 noon. And we'll hear the tones of one John Brady as he breaks down the game as the color commentator. John, I don't know about you, man. I'm sick of answering questions about all this legal stuff. I just want to play basketball, right?
Well, you know, it's hard to answer questions when you really don't know any facts. You know a bunch of stuff, but in terms of what really is taking place or has taken place, it's all conjecture. So I'm like you. It's a waste of time to talk about it. That's why let's talk about this basketball team and what it can potentially do in this SEC tournament.
I've said all along, I happen to be on the one and only basketball team at LSU that won an SEC tournament like 39 years ago. Man, we're getting old. But this team seems to have all the...
How does Dale feel?
he looks at what these coaches are making these days, and he's none too happy.
That's right.
too happy.
That's right. I love it.
Oh, man. But, look, I think they have everything you need. I mean, you know, you're going to have to play consecutive games in a row. You better have good guards, and that's not a better triumvirate or depending upon what happens with Javonte Smart, there's not a better trio of guards, I think, in America.
Yeah, and especially in terms of being able to beat the defender off the dribble. These three guys with Javonte playing, all three of them can put it on the deck and take it by a defender, create help and rotation of defense, and then they either can finish or they make the correct pass and let somebody else score. And that's really, you know, they spread it out. And they sometimes they use a ball screen, sometimes they don't, depending on what the defense is doing with the ball screen. And they just go by people, and that's a great that sometimes that's not coaching. You settle that in recruiting. So, you know, they go hand in hand, but, you know, you recruit players like that and let them play. That's a combination of good recruiting and good coaching and being smart enough to let these guys make plays on their own.
And I think that because I don't know what you've been in these tournaments before, but I think that's even more prevalent than ever in a conference tournament because everybody knows what you're going to do. You just got to have guys that can make plays on their own, and I think that comes into play even more so in a tournament format.
Yeah, and with the double bye, you know, you don't really, you know, LSU's in a great shape. You know, they come in here and win a game, and you know, lo and behold, they got a chance to win it all. So they don't have to play four games in a row like maybe you guys did back when y'all won it. So it's a different deal now with so many teams in the SEC. But you know, LSU, I tell you, some people say, well, what about our draw? Well, I'll tell you about our draw. I was thinking about it and looked at it. You know, the teams that we have a chance to play, Arkansas or Florida, are the two teams that beat us in the SEC this year.
Exactly, exactly.
And two, you know, in all four close games. So my deal is, with everything that has gone on, it's not too bad to play teams like this because it's going to get our team's attention. Because they're going to have some respect for Florida or Arkansas simply because of what they experienced during the regular season. So with all the stuff going around the team, it's not bad to get them to focus in on one of these two teams based on how they played us during the regular season.
If Tony Benford called you up and said, John, what do we do? Dude? I mean, what kind of advice would you give me? Under the circumstances that he's under?
Well, he's got to they just got to do what they've been doing. I would just tell him to do what you've been doing. Do what Coach Wade has established, the same things y'all been doing for every game. You know, this team has really had a knack for concentrating on the task at hand when adversity has taken place. You know, way back, Wade Sims, what a tragic thing was for this team to absorb and handle. You know, Tremont Waters not starting for three games because Will wanted to get control of the team. This latest stuff that has gone on. You know, this team has concentrated and come through some adversity this year. So I think their concentration level is going to be pretty good. So I would just go with what you've been doing. Don't change anything. Don't try to invent the wheel. Don't try to overcoach. And, in fact, I think Benford against Vanderbilt allowed them to play a little bit more freedom or loose, particularly Tremont Waters early in that game. He just took it off the dribble and created a really relaxed atmosphere offensively for this team. And I think that's going to be the same approach here. I tell you, the other thing I noticed, Jordy, I thought the team in Vanderbilt's not that good, obviously. Yeah. But we defended pretty well the other night. Had a lot of energy about us and a lot of pop. It's certainly, you know, offense can come and go. But if we have that kind of involvement defensively in this tournament, with or without Javonte, we'll have a chance to win the game tomorrow.
I thought, to your point, Tony Benford went up to Tremont Waters and wasn't too big or too bold to say, man, look, I need your help. Here's the ball. Go do it, man. Help me, all right? Because I need your help. And that, boy, what kind of empowerment does that give? I mean, Tremont Waters is so good. Now he's like, oh, man, the coach really, I'm ready. Let's go, right?
Well, yeah, it's a smart thing, too, by Tony to put his ego aside and says, I'm the coach now. Let me show everybody what I can do. No, he did just the opposite. He gave it to the players, went to, you know, our best player, particularly offensively, and said, hey, look, you do your thing, and maybe you're going to have a little more freedom to do what you want to do. Mm-hmm. So let's go out and win this thing. So I think that's a good move by Tony to do. I think we traveled over here yesterday with the team. The coaches get along. It's still a relaxed atmosphere. Okay. The players don't seem to be uptight about anything simply because of what they've handled throughout the course of the mm-hmm. year. And I think they understand what has gone on, but I think they're really ready to play, and I'll be disappointed if we don't play well tomorrow.
I would, too. Mom said there was no such thing as a stupid question, so I'm going to ask it anyway. Do you anticipate LSU to be the villain of this tournament?
I've heard that, and I saw Tremont Waters talk about that a little bit, but I don't know what we've done to become the villain. I mean, I think there's so many unanswered questions out there. Mm-hmm. I think it's too early to judge LSU one way or the other. Now, it may do that. I mean, they're probably, Florida fans or whoever, or Kentucky fans, Tennessee fans, they'll be pulling against us, I believe. But those things happen anyway when you've won the league. You probably become a target when you've won the league outright, as LSU has, and I think this latest thing has added something to it, but it really has nothing to do with these players. They earned what they've gotten by how they played. And I've said this several times, Jordy, and I want everybody to understand this. This is Will Wade's team. He recruited these guys. He's put it together. He's developed mm-hmm. the culture. He's got us to this point by the way he's handled these players and brought this team through the adversity that it's faced. And sometimes – fans and media, they move on to the next guy. And I don't want it to move on to the next guy. I think people mm-hmm. should remember this is Will Wade's team. He's got us to this point. And I think somewhere down inside of this team, it's going to give them a little something extra to play for, as they did against Vanderbilt, this past Saturday.
Well said. And I don't think players forget. Just because that coach is not there, they still remember all the messages that have been delivered, all the – they know what's right. They know what's wrong. As Tremont Waters says, I know Coach Wade was throwing things at the TV when I was making that mistake during the game. So they are well aware of what is expected of them, no matter who's out there.
They do, and it has shown up in numerous games this year. And this team's ability to win five overtime games. Are you kidding me? I mean,
amazing.
It's just and go undefeated on the road in the SEC. That means right there that the intangibles that are flowing through this team are in place, because you can't win close games if you have a team that's somewhat selfish of one another or divided in any way. And I think the indication of a championship team is the number of close games they've won, and certainly LSU has done that.
There's always a turning point, but when in your mind did you say that, man, you know what? Not only is this a really good team, this has a chance to be a very special team that can maybe cut down the nets on the last night of the year. And I think that's a legitimate shot if things go their way. Was there a turning point in the season to you?
Well, I've said this several times, and you and I have talked about it. I think when we lost in Orlando to Florida State, which we could have won that game, we lost to a not very good Oklahoma State team. We had a 14-point lead with 17 minutes to go at Houston, and we lose at the end. And I think after that, Coach Wade, when he didn't start mm-hmm. Tremont Waters for three games, I think the team wasn't settled offensively. It wasn't But the ball wasn't moving as well as it needed to. And when Coach Wade took him out of the starting lineup for three games and brought him back, we went on a 10 or 11-game winning streak, whatever it was, and I think that settled the team down. I think it was a courageous move, a bold move, but it turned out to be the right move. And I think it's gotten overlooked a little bit, but to me, from a coaching standpoint, I think that was a great coaching decision, a smart one, a tough one. But I think it changed the complexity of this team and how it approached each game.
If you sit down the best player, that puts everybody on guard. Man, if I don't do what the coach wants me to do, I could be on the bench as well. And everybody, every player, the most important thing is playing time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the respect that created within the team and the hierarchy that that it established within the team. You know, Coach Wade's in charge. He's going to make tough decisions based on what's best for the team. And it's no fault of Tremont's, really. I think sometimes when players put their name in early and they go work out for NBA teams, it kind of, a young man that's 19 years old, it can change his thought process a little bit. And possibly, I'm saying possibly, he was playing more for the NBA than for LSU, if you wanted to break it, make it mm-hmm. real simple. Mm-hmm. And then when Coach Wade benched him or took him out of the lineup, you know, he started playing more for LSU and Coach Wade, and that changed the whole way this team approached games.
Because of circumstances and other things going on, we are taping this interview as Arkansas and Florida are playing. As you mentioned, those are the only two teams in this entire SEC season that have beaten LSU, Florida and Arkansas. And which one in your mind presents the more difficult challenge to LSU?
Well, I think probably Florida, simply because of the style of play and how okay. they play. They're more of a team. They will fast break. They like that, and they will shoot threes, but they're more of a half-court team, a deliberate team. I think they're a better defensive team than Arkansas, and I okay. think the way they're going to play us will be more difficult for us to overcome on a neutral floor. Whereas Arkansas, they'll shoot it 75 times a game, and mm-hmm. if you shoot it that many times, that means the ball's going up and down the floor, and I think the court gets more spread when you play Arkansas. And with the players we have, that's right up our alley. So if I had to just choose one, I would say okay. I would rather play Arkansas. But, you know, at this point, you really can't do that.
That's right. That's right.
I think I would lean toward more playing Arkansas simply because the court will be more spread. It will be more of a free-flowing game than if we do play Florida, which will be more of a tempo-type control game that Florida likes to play.
Oh, by the way, tip of the hat mm-hmm. to one John Brady, who on this show said that Auburn was going to beat Tennessee in the regular mm-hmm. season finale and that LSU would have a chance to win the whole thing outright. Mm-hmm. Nostra Brady, nice job.
Well, you know, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but sometimes I do get it right.
Well, look, I greatly appreciate the time. It's fun to talk about things on the court, and I've said this for the last 5 or 6 days. Man, LSU basketball fans need to stop focusing on the periphery and focus on the kids on the court. That's what really counts. That's what really matters. That's all you can really put your hands around and hold on to dearly. So the kids deserve it, and let's push them through this thing and see if they can win the whole darn thing. John Brady joining us from Nashville. We'll take a timeout, and we'll come back with more. This is the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfer Show on 1037 The Game.
Hi, we welcome you back to Jordy Helfer Show, 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, CD, back in the True 37 Roof Studios, taking care of business, and we're brought to you in part by DC's Little Capital Exit. I love that store right there, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia Exit in Brobridge. Anytime I'm coming from Baton Rouge to Lafayette or Lafayette to Baton Rouge, or if I'm going to Houston or Lake Charles, I always stop there because it's always something new, something fun, something exciting. It's not your run-of-the-mill convenience store. It's got a little bit of everything, and that true soul food deli. I got to get me a cheeseburger at least once or twice a month. Got to, because it's so, so good. DC's Little Capital Exxon, it makes my drive, whether it's 5 miles or 50 miles or 500 miles, all the more enjoyable. It will do the same for you. That is D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon. SEC baseball will begin utilizing centralized video review this weekend. The SEC Video Center will be based at the conference office in Birmingham. So the conference experimented with this last year at the SEC tournament and decided to move forward. So the replay official will review plays in SEC versus SEC games and will render decisions that will be communicated to the on-site umpire crew. The process is consistent with the system used by Major League Baseball. So, we'll see if this speeds up the process, slows it down, but I think what everybody wants is to just get it right. Get it right. And that would be nice. Spring football, the first week of it has wrapped up. It's in the books. And according to all those that have been around it and seen it, practices take place during our show, so we can't do that. But they're putting in a lot of new things. And new things are good. Got to get this offense up to speed, right? Got to get it up to speed. So we'll see. What happens in spring doesn't always evolve and equate into what's going to happen when they turn the lights on and they start keeping score, because a lot of times coaches go back to what they are familiar with. But I like the new influx of youthful, talented coaches that have brought things. Joe Brady has brought things over from Sean Payton, Pete Carmichael, and that always efficient, always fun to watch New Orleans Saints offense. I'm more excited about this than at any other time, and I think a great hire by Ed Orgeron. A great hire. Yes, indeed. Again, in closing on this Will Wade saga, the lines have been drawn in the sand. LSU says, the door's open. Come on and talk to us. Will Wade says, my counsel says, I'm not going to talk, and it's my constitutional right. Well, as I saw on from our good friend Glenn Gilbo of Gannett, Will Wade's statement discussed his constitutional rights while he breaks his contractual obligations. Page 3 of his contract says his duties include, quote, cooperating fully in any investigation conducted or authorized by LSU, the SEC, or the NCAA at any time of possible NCAA or SEC violations. Will Wade has the right not to say anything, but LSU, as the employer of Will Wade, the employee, also has the right to do what they have done. So again, let's focus on the kids. Let's focus on the team. They're resilient. If you have kids, man, they forgive, they forget, they move on. It's old news 5 minutes from now. They're out there playing for themselves, for their brotherhood. That's what they're playing for. And we'll see how they respond to it. It's either going to go one way or the other. I don't think there's going to be any middle ground here. Either they're going to play great or they're going to lay an egg. That's how it's going to be. And we'll see. We will see. And when we come on the air tomorrow, we will know if LSU has advanced to the semifinals of the SEC tournament or if they're just going to go back to Baton Rouge and await their selection into the NCAA tournament. They could be anywhere from a 2 seed. I don't think they drop down to a 4 seed. I think they're a 2 or a 3. And that, in and of itself, is quite remarkable. Hour number one, history. Coming up, hour number two, hot topics, and then a lot of pro football from both the Saints' perspective and league-wide. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show, 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Time is pulled off. another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go on this Thursday, March the 14th, the year 2019. In case you missed it, Florida beat Arkansas in the SEC basketball tournament today, 66-50. That means right here on 103.7 The Game with a pregame show at 11:30 tomorrow, Friday. Tip at 12 noon. It'll be LSU versus Florida, part three. And why should it disappoint? The first two went to overtime thrillers. We'll see what happens on this one. And LSU baseball gets their SEC season underway. Zach Hess will be the starting pitcher Friday. Cole Henry, the starting pitcher Saturday. Eric Walker on Sunday. So without further ado, let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Clint Domain, a producer extraordinaire, joins us now for What's Hot. CD, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Jordy. My goodness, I had a lot planned for Hot Topics today, but we got to kind of lead off with some breaking news, Jordy, about the New Orleans Saints making a move in free agency, signing defensive tackle Malcolm Brown to a three-year, $15 million deal, formerly of the New England Patriots. He has a new home. How huge is that when you look at the defensive line? That could wind up, that's going to probably wind up taking Tyler Davidson out of New Orleans. And obviously, Sheldon Rankins, he's probably going to miss the first 6 weeks of the season due to his injury towards the end of the year. But having him, that's huge.
Well, a former first-round pick out of Texas, played with the New England Patriots. I think he had played in 60 games, 51 starts. He mans that middle spot in your 3-4 defense. You need help there. Absolutely a man. Good pickup, no question about that. They addressed one of their pressing needs in free agency. So, three-year, $15 million deal. That's it. Go Saints. He's only 25 years old.
Exactly.
So let's go.
It's huge to get this guy in there, and you got to think about the fact that they're probably going to wind up trying to fill that defensive end position because Alex Okafor, according to sources, could be out the door as well. We talk about Tyler Davidson. I think this one's going to hurt a lot more when you look at Okafor. But obviously, Ziggy Ansah could be that guy to fill that role if that happens.
Yeah, we'll talk with Larry Holder about that. He's in Buffalo as we speak and then coming to purportedly to New Orleans. So the Saints look like they've targeted who they want. Now let's see if the dollars make sense. And if they do, okay, let's go.
Well, you can about imagine you've got some money to move around because you just freed up $10.8 million once again.
How about that?
The Loomis math is amazing, and I want him to teach a college course on how to do that. Because dude just knows how to manage a budget like nobody else, freeing up $10.8 million in cap space with the new negotiations for Drew Brees. Mind you, that's going to be $41.3 million pushed to the 2020 season in terms of a dead cap hit.
Well, it's going to be about $16 million. They'll circumvent it over the years to come. It's not going to be a $40 million hit in 1 year. There's no way on that. But is there a more beloved figure in the Crescent City than Drew Brees? People were asking, "Why renegotiate his contract? Come on, take one for the team." And of course, he does, and freed up the money. Now let's see what else they can do with it.
Exactly, Jordy. Talking about that, and now we got to move over to the MLB for a quick second because they've started announcing all kinds of new rules and whatnot for 2019 and some plans for the 2020 season. But the biggest thing to me, Jordy, we talked about a little bit yesterday, some of the stuff that's going on, like the trade deadline. Only one trade deadline during the year might not affect as much as this, Jordy, because the MLB announced that the Home Run Derby winner will be earning $1 million. Would that motivate enough of these big names to agree to participate?
Heck to the yeah. You're going to see a couple of New York Yankees in there. You're going to see Bryce Harper in there. All the long ball hitters. Heck yeah. And they should do the same thing in the NBA for the slam dunk contest. Let's bring out the best of the best and let them go to work. I'm all for it. Yes, indeed. Now, I don't know. I mean, you got $1 million to give to somebody? Why not? Go ahead.
I mean, that'd be amazing to kind of get that thing set up, get it going with the home run derby, the slam dunk contest. I feel like they should have done that years ago whenever you had a lot of high-level talent. Because imagine if you had LeBron James playing in the dunk contest early on in his career, how much fun that would be.
Oh, absolutely. Now we'll see the Greek Freak. There'll be all kind of players coming out of And some of the best dunkers in the world don't even play in the NBA. They're just out there on the blacktop doing their thing. So, no, I'm all for it. Whatever. If they've got it to spend it, let's spice it up. Let's make it bigger and better and more exciting for the paying public.
Yeah, why not kind of allow some of these guys? You talked about the blacktop guys. These guys that participate in these dunk contests just on
That's
the regular. Bring these guys in as well. Bring in some ringers. Because you can about imagine the crazy stuff you'd see on TNT, and who knows, maybe they wind up getting a contract not long after that.
I'd make it two separate divisions. I'd have the pro division, I'd have the amateur division, and let's go. Pros on one end, amateurs on the other, alternate turns. Let's do it. Oh, it'd be great. It'd be great.
All right, Jordy, just make sure you make that elevator pitch next time you see the NBA commish Adam Silver. See what's going on with that. Maybe when he takes over the NFL, you could be the commish of the NBA. That'd be awesome.
Oh, man. I don't know, man. People want me to coach LSU basketball. What? Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, boy. That'd be interesting to see if we can get you to be the head coach of the LSU
Tigers.
Can
I do my radio show, though? Because I want to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, I think we could keep doing the radio show.
Okay.
Mind you, once we get to road games, we kind of would have to figure out
something. That's technology. We can figure it out.
We can figure it out.
Absolutely.
But we were talking about to start things off in Hot Topics about the New Orleans Saints getting a former New England Patriot. But the Patriots haven't necessarily made any moves in free agency, Jordy. And it got me thinking, should we even be surprised that the Pats aren't doing anything?
No. Bill Belichick, you saw the latest photos of him. He's swimming off the coast of Barbados, getting a sunburn. They're not worried. They know what they're doing. Don't worry. Nobody ever worries about the Patriots. They're smarter than everybody else.
Exactly, Jordy. And last one here, real quick, we got to talk about it. Tomorrow afternoon, 11:30 pregame, 12 o'clock tip, LSU, Florida. What's your prediction for tomorrow, Jordy? Are we going to get a third overtime game between these two?
It wouldn't surprise me. I always fear the first game in a tournament, particularly when you're playing against a team that already has a game under their belt. I just fear that. Florida has always played LSU tough. I'm going to reserve my right to judge that till later, but needless to say, I don't know what to expect from LSU. I don't. I don't know what to expect. They could be great or they could fall flat on their face. But one thing for sure, Cajun Chef's always great.
Yes,
greatest hot sauce in the planet. Bring a little small bottle with you wherever you go because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Larry Holder, Saints, next.
Topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
And we welcome you back. This is the Jordy Hultberg Show brought to you by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. And I'm always happy when I get to talk to Larry Holder of The Athletic about all things, in particular the New Orleans Saints. Larry, I'm not going to ask you if you've talked to Will Wade lately. I'm going to let that go, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, and I have not. So, you know, hey, let the squabbling continue, and let's just exchange statements and have a good old party with that.
Yeah, let's draw our lines in the sand and never shall one of us cross, and then we'll just keep on going on indefinitely. All right. So the Saints restructured Drew Brees' contract. to create about almost $11 million in cap space. So tell me the whys and what happened here.
Why? Because they didn't have a lot of cap space. And okay. His contract was always structured to where if they needed to do this, this was open and available. I mean, his base salary for 2019 was going to be around $10, $11 million. And he had bonuses, prorated and roster bonuses tied in there, basically kind of split into threes. And so this was there always to be had. And so okay. what happened is, that have now shifted money down the line to 2020, which technically he's not really under contract, and they've shifted it to 2021, where he's definitely technically not really under contract. They're under voidable years, so if Drew were to be done after 2019, they would have a $21 million dead money hit to the salary cap. It wouldn't be all in 1 year, but it would be about 16 in 2020 and about 5 in 2021. And look, this is just the way that they've operated. But no, they're doing this to try to create room to go after some significant players. A, Teddy Bridgewater, try to get him back. B, Jared Cook, who's easily the best pass receiving tight end on the market. And C, if Ziggy Ansah leaves Buffalo without a contract, he is reportedly set to get to New Orleans after that. So they're trying to extend everywhere they can without really messing with any of the other players' contracts.
Larry Holder, The Athletic, you mentioned Teddy Bridgewater. We all thought maybe that was a done deal. Miami is where he is from, has come in. Are they offering more money, more years? What's the latest you've heard on Teddy Bridgewater?
Jordy, it reminded me too much like the Tom Herman negotiations with LSU. They're expected to have Teddy come back, basically the wake-up call to the Dolphins. Hey, beef up your offer, or we're going to stay in New Orleans, and you have no quarterback that you're confident in. So, you know, Teddy did visit with Miami yesterday and exited that visit without a contract. I mean, that visit's not very far because he's currently in Miami right now. As you said, he resides there. But the reporting around that has been he turned down a two-year, $10 million contract with the Dolphins. Right now on the table is a one-year, $7 million contract from the Saints. So I'm assuming Miami would probably be apt to upping their offer for Teddy, but look, that remains to be seen. And as of right now, he's currently floating out there in the
in
free
the
agency land. Right,
in the free agency cloud. Yes, I got you. If he does go to Miami and he rejects the New Orleans Saints, what do the Saints do from there?
Well, they'll probably just go hunt down a backup. I mean, I don't think Taysom Hill can necessarily be the end-all, be-all backup just because they use him in so many different scenarios that he's not just going to stand around there and wait and stand on the side if Drew Brees gets hurt or anything like that. So they probably would go out and look for a backup. They certainly wouldn't pay as much for a backup. No, there's no doubt about that. But also, it's the kind of the game where, all right, they want to keep Teddy in house in case they feel like he could be the heir apparent. Now, you talk 1 year, $7 million. 1 year tells me that the Saints might not totally envision Teddy as the heir apparent. I mean, as soon as I saw that, that was where I looked.
Yes.
And that, you know, that's the bigger picture part of the story here. Now, maybe they figure, all right, Teddy, you know, we'll give you 1 year. That should satisfy you. We'll give you a little bit more money, and then we'll see how it plays out, and then really go in all after you the following year. But to me, it shows that there is a bit of a question that they feel like the end-all, be-all heir apparent is Teddy Bridgewater.
Is there a switch of quarterbacks? I mean, if Bridgewater goes to Miami, would the Saints even ponder Ryan Tannehill for a one-year deal?
Well, I saw last night Pro Football Talk apparently talked to a source, I'm assuming someone within the Saints building, someone who makes decisions, and they said basically absolutely not. So, okay. I'm sure Tannehill would want decent money. I mean, if you're not going to have Teddy, might as well just go get some backup. I mean, yeah. What's the point in going to go get somebody who's there? Unless you draft someone, which that certainly can be the case, and that's open if the Saints really like a quarterback somewhere along the line within the draft, within their limited resources of picks.
Larry Holder, The Athletic. The Saints also need some depth up front. I see where they're hosting defensive lineman Mario Edwards. What's the lowdown on him?
Well, you'd probably look at him more as a defensive tackle. He played some of that with the Giants. You know, he's a younger player. He's coming off of his rookie contract. So, the Saints certainly have some issues at defensive tackle. Now, he wouldn't be an every-down defensive tackle. I mean, he's honestly, I don't know if he's totally big enough to be defensive tackle as it is, but the Giants played him there a decent bit. But you look at it as the Saints know Sheldon Rankins is not going to be ready for the season. You could easily be without Tyler Davis, and because he's a free agent, and I've really heard nothing on that front at all, if they're going to bring him back. And then David Onyemata could face a short suspension due to his charge with marijuana, and which was kind of silly. But anyway, that's still there. So you've got certainly some question marks, and there's a reason why he's coming in for a visit.
Larry, if you rank them in priority, there's Bridgewater out there, Edwards out there, Ziggy out there, and you mentioned Jared Cook, the best catching tight end that's out there on the market. If you had to prioritize them from position of need and ability, would you have Cook at the top of the list?
Probably so. It's going to depend on the price. I think people still have sticker shock over Kobe Fleener. I mean, he still cost $3.5 million to this year's cap, and he didn't even play last year, which is going to show you how deep the Saints were in on him and what a mistake that was. So, I'm curious to see if they sign him, what the numbers are there. But it just goes to show you they know it's a big missing piece. There are a bunch of tight ends who have actually signed contracts already, but I think Jared was probably looking for a place that's best for his skill set. The Saints would certainly be it for catching the football. The Saints need someone desperately there. They've got a number two guy with Josh Hill they feel comfortable with as a blocker, and then he might catch 10 receptions, 20 receptions a year. But I think he's number one. I'd say at skill level, I'd probably put Ansa two, just because he was hurt last year, but two previous years he had double-digit sacks. We're talking 12 sacks, 14 sacks. I mean, he was a big, big monster. But what do you get from him? And then Edwards isn't a starter. He's kind of a rotational guy. So I put him at three.
Were you surprised or not surprised at the Saints, how much they value Will Lutz?
Oh, I'm not surprised at that at all. Just because they've had such kicking issues throughout much of the Sean Payton tenure. I mean, Will Lutz was the 11th kicker to actually kick for the Saints in a regular season game since Sean Payton has been the coach. I mean, it's the Bermuda Triangle. Yeah. You come in, you get spit out, and then you're lost in oblivion. So, and Sean Payton gambled. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He admits it to this day. It was a gamble, and if he's going to go down, he's going to go down with this guy, and he's proved him right. And so, Will Lutz is probably, I saw the numbers, he's making a little more than $4 million a year, which means, in about the top six or seven kickers in the NFL. So, but certainly well-deserved. I mean, one of the best kickers in the NFL. And now you're stunned if he misses one, as opposed to you're worried if he's even going to hit the football.
We always try to point finger to blame, with the LSU basketball thing. There's a faction that is pointing the finger at Joe Oliva. There's a faction pointing at Will Wade. With Mark Ingram and the New Orleans Saints, what are people thinking along those lines with that? Because for a guy that started off as poorly as he did, he became beloved by Saints fans and teammates alike.
Well, what people are thinking and what I feel happened, I mean, it just depends on the way you look at it.
I want to hear what you think happened. You tell me what happened.
Mark Ingram's agent overplayed their hand. I mean,
gotcha.
That's it. Not just with the Saints, but just with the market outside of the Saints in general. And so the number I'm hearing that they thought they could at least try to negotiate with was $7.5 million a year. I thought that was high.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hearing that while I was in Indianapolis. So even if you bump that down a little bit, say 6.5 or 6 a year, the Saints were never going to go that high. I knew it. So I still assumed, all right, both parties would figure this thing out, come to a resolution. But obviously that didn't happen. And so once the Saints said, all right, you're not coming down at all, anywhere near to where we want to go, at a position where the Saints probably feel like they could in some ways plug and play, and the next best guy they had on their board was in that role was Latavius Murray, and he was only going to cost them $3.5 million a year. So the Saints went that route. Then Ingram goes out and sees what else is out there, and the best offer on the board was three years, $15 million, and that was from the Ravens. So I feel like they probably overestimated the market for Mark Ingram, and now he is now a Baltimore Raven.
Larry Holder of The Athletic, I appreciate your time as always. Have a great St. Paddy's Day Saturday, and enjoy the rest of the week, my friend. Always a joy when we get you on, man. Greatly appreciate it.
Bye, Jordy. Take care, buddy.
All right, buddy. You too. Larry Holder of The Athletic will continue the NFL talk. The Schwab, editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports, Frank Schwab, talks about the rest of the league. And man, if you're a Cleveland Brown fan, you got to just be like on cloud nine, right? Next.
Well, Lou, you finally got an audition to be in the lottery's TV spot, Boil It Up. You could win up to $15,000.
Come on, Lou, this is my moment to shine.
What do you have to do?
Well, I just slide into that big pot with all the other crawfish.
Lou, have you thought this through?
Of course, the lottery's working with Zatarain's on this one. This is the big time.
Play Boil It Up from the lottery. Win up to $15,000. Must be at least 21 to purchase.
Zatarain's and associated marks and logos are registered trademarks of McCormick & Company, Incorporated. Licensed to Louisiana Lottery.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Let's continue the theme of NFL and free agency. We touched a little bit upon the New Orleans Saints, and now let's go around the league with, I think he's the best. He is Frank Schwab. He is the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports with a wealth of information and knowledge. Frank, what do you think so far of the free agency, and who's been the big winner in your mind?
I mean, any other answer than Cleveland is just trying too hard. I mean, they've done a great job. I mean, once you get a guy like Odell Beckham, I mean, you are the winners of the offseason. I thought that was a great move for them. A rising team. I mean, the Raiders, you know, they got Antonio Brown too, but, you know, the Raiders are in a different place. They're not going to contend this year. But you know, now you look at the Cleveland Browns roster and you say, they might. This might be a team that's ready to make some splashes. I really like the aggressiveness. I don't think they're done. I think they're going to keep making moves to improve that team. And, you know, I think they're clearly the favorites in the AFC North. And if you want to talk me into them being one of the contenders in the AFC, I can't argue too much. This has been a heck of an offseason for the Browns. Their fans should be really fired up right now.
What are the Giants trying to accomplish? Are they tanking for the quarterback at Clemson? I mean, what are they doing?
I don't think that's what's happening. I don't know, though. I couldn't sit here and tell you. Like, there just has been no rhyme or reason to really anything they've done the past year and a half. I mean, it just seems like, you know, maybe this is just very oversimplifying, but it just seems like since they benched Eli Manning for one game, everything they've done has been just trying to make it up to him, and they refuse to face reality and cut him and move on. I mean, passing on Darnold last year in the draft, and kind of having one foot in, one foot out of, are we rebuilding? Are we trying to be a contender? Are we, nothing has really made sense. Two moves never seem related with them. Like, why are you doing this and not that? And, you know, I don't see, you can't blame like a former regime for the Odell Beckham thing. This regime signed him to that big extension, and a year later, when Odell Beckham was the same guy we always thought he's been, nothing else happened, nothing new came to light. I mean, they decided to just take on a huge cap hit and trade him, and I get a great return for it. Good return, I guess, but not great. I just don't know what they're doing. It's very confusing what the Giants are trying to accomplish these days.
Le'Veon Bell to the New York Jets. What did you think of that?
It's fine. I can't get too excited. I don't think in today's NFL you're ever really going to be on the right side of history investing $13 million a year in a running back. It's just, He's a great player. He's a really big talent, but he also, you know, in 2017, the last time we saw him, his yards per carry went down from 4.9 to 4. And now he's sat out a year. He's had a lot of touches, a lot of miles on his legs. You're older. I'm not saying he's just going to hit the wall and not be a great player, but I really doubt he's going to give them four great years. I don't know. I hope so. He's a great player. He's fun to watch. But, again, I just can't get behind the idea of paying a running back that much. That's not where I'd allocate my resources. It's a fine. I'm not saying it's a bad signing. It's just I'm not going to, you know, say they're going to be able to challenge the Patriots now. It's just not a
right.
It's a move that helps them, especially if they have the cap room for it. That's fine. But it's probably going to get a lot more pats on the back than I'm willing to give them.
Who's going to be the better team next year, the Jets or the Giants?
Oh, Jets by far, I think. I think the Giants really might be, I mean, they probably are going to be the worst offense in the NFL. I feel bad for Saquon. He's going to get like 50 touches a game and probably for about 62 yards. I think the Giants are going to be in play. I don't think they're tanking necessarily, but they're going to still be in play for the number one pick. I mean, I just don't see how they're really going to be competitive this year. Meanwhile, I don't think the Jets are great or anything, but I think the Jets are better. I think the Jets were better last year, weren't they? I think that the Jets finished ahead of them in the standings. So I think that, the Giants just the good news in the NFL, though, is you can turn things around quick. Two, 3 years, you could be right back there. But right now, who would have thought we'd be saying this 2 years ago? But I think Odell Beckham landed with a far better team. Odell Beckham should be football-wise. Odell Beckham should be thrilled today. He ended up with a team with far better quarterback, far better future. That's just how quick things change in the NFL, I guess, where all of a sudden the Cleveland Browns are a team on the rise and the New York Giants are going the other way.
Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. The Saints have just reported that they're going to sign former Patriot defensive tackle Malcolm Brown. That's a position of need. Do you like that move?
That's fine. It's one of those moves that it makes sense for them. He's an active body. He got paid maybe a little bit more than I thought he would. It looked like about $5 million a year for him.
Mm-hmm.
It's a perfectly reasonable signing. It's nothing crazy. I'm a little surprised with the Saints that they haven't done anything at receiver. I thought that with the receiver market, you know, who are you going to get?
Yeah.
Who has been there wasn't much out there, and what is out there has been pretty expensive. So, that is one need the Saints had to look at, and I thought it's perfectly reasonable.
Tight end from the Oakland Raiders is going to be visiting with the Saints, and his name has completely escaped me.
Jared Cook, what do you think of that?
I
just talked about getting a receiver. I think Jared Cook's the same thing. I mean, he's one of these tight ends that's never going to block for you. He's not an inline guy, so he's practically your number two receiver alongside Michael Thomas. I think that would be a fine move. I don't know that necessarily he's going to totally replicate what he did last year. He had a very good year. He's always been kind of inconsistent up and down, but he does show those flashes. And when you're in a good offense with a good quarterback, it's going to maximize whatever he has. As long as the price tag isn't crazy, and it might be because there's not many tight ends out there, but as long as price tag isn't too crazy for Jared Cook, I'd be totally on board with that. It's a little bit of a creative way of getting around the whole, like, who's our number two receiver conundrum. Mm.
I got you. Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner, Yahoo Sports. Teddy Bridgewater thought he was coming back to the Saints for another year. They offered him a one-year, $7 million deal, which tells me I'm not so sure he's the heir apparent to Drew Brees. But then that kind of opened up Miami's eyes a little bit. How do you think that all shakes out?
I don't know. I mean, I was shocked. I'll be honest. You know, the reports were that the Dolphins, you know, offered more money and the chance to start. And boy, here's Teddy Bridgewater. That's tough to pass up. I know you might love New Orleans and that locker room and the opportunity maybe to beat Brees' heir apparent. I mean, he's not going to play forever. So, but, you know, to turn up more money and a chance to start, like, who does that? But the Dolphins are kind of a mess. It's just going to be interesting. It'll be interesting to see where the numbers come in. I mean, it's the weird thing for Teddy, we talked about the last week, is there just aren't many teams looking for a starting quarterback. Once Foles went to the Jaguars, mm-hmm. that was kind of it. Except mm-hmm. Dolphins, who are a mess. I mean, even though Teddy's from there, even though, you know, they do have a, they would allow him to start, who else is going to start for them? It's still not a, it almost seems like, is this really best for my career? Am I going to take off here? Maybe you do, because you're, feel really good about your ability and all that, but they're not a good situation. I don't know how this shakes out. I really don't. I was shocked to begin with. I was shocked that he kind of, you know, started to change his mind. The Dolphins were re-recruiting him, and now it's just kind of up in the air. I could see it either way. I have no idea how it's going to shake out.
I don't either. Is there a landing spot for a Blake Bortles?
It goes back to, you know, I think a backup, yeah, sure. I think somebody will gladly have him as a backup. And then maybe he can, you know, rehabilitate his career from there. The name I saw tossed out was the Green Bay Packers, and that makes total sense to me. Like, yeah, why not? I mean, give him a chance to be behind Aaron Rodgers, no pressure. You just go and you kind of clear your mind, learn how to play the game from different coaching staff and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, Bortles is out there. He's not going to start for anybody, though. I mean, it's just who in the NFL is looking for a starter? That's 5 years ago, there, you know, you go into free agents, you'd even go into the draft, you'd even be after the draft, you'd wonder about a few teams and who they're going to start. This year it's not that way, and you know, guys like Bortles, you know, I mean, Case Keenum landed on his feet. I don't want to say luckily because of Alex Smith's injury, but you know what I mean. Like there was an opening there at least for him, or he would have been a backup. Bortles is going to be a backup. Bridgewater is either going to be a backup or starting with maybe the worst team in the NFL. So it's still a lot has to happen, but I don't know. I think Bortles just he has to make the right move with his next move, the right team that's going to really, again. He has talent. We know that, but he needs a coach that's really going to coach him up and make him into a better player.
Frank, we talked about Cleveland winning free agency. We talked about the Giants losing free agency. Is there another team out there that you thought has done fairly well?
Yeah, I think team nobody's talking about is the Packers, and because they didn't sign a Le'Veon Bell and they didn't trade for an Odell Beckham. But I thought the moves that they made really fit what they needed. There's a couple ways to help a franchise quarterback. One of them's clear. You go and sign a bunch of receivers or running backs or whatever. But the other way is just building a great defense. You know, to make sure your quarterback's not feeling like he's got to go out and score 40 points to win a game. And I think that's what the Packers did for Aaron Rodgers here. They looked at their defense and there wasn't a lot of pass rush. So they went out and got Preston Smith from the Redskins, who I really like as a kind of an under-the-radar pass rusher. Za'Darius Smith from the Ravens really came on last year. He's very versatile. They signed, you know, safety Adrian Amos away from the Bears, who weakened the division rival. They still have three picks in the top 44 because of that Saints trade last year in the draft. I think that, you know, we're going to look at the end of the offseason and kind of say, wow, the Packers really did a lot to improve their team. They still got Aaron Rodgers, so, you know, that if these pieces kind of stick and fit in the right places, they could be right back to contender status.
Very interesting. All right, Frank, we will. You're going to be on vacation next week, you lucky dog. I'm thrilled for you, sad for us and our listeners. But wherever you may be going, enjoy it to the fullest. And we greatly, greatly appreciate your time on I just got to ask you again, the Pittsburgh Steelers are they going to fool everybody and just be good again next year, or are they on the downhill decline?
I mean, it's possible because you look and you say, well, James Conner filled in for Le'Veon very well. He's a good player. And I'm not saying James Washington is Antonio Brown, but they do have Juju Smith-Schuster is a heck of a receiver. I mean, he except for touchdowns, he outpaced Antonio Brown in every category last year. So he got number one. You just need to find a James Washington or somebody like that who's a capable number two. Ben's still a Hall of Fame talent, led the NFL in passing yards last year. So, yeah, I don't love the direction the Pittsburgh Steelers have gone in, but if you buy into the fact that their locker room's going to be a little better now, they still have talent there. They still have top-end talent to replace some of these guys. Yeah, the Steelers could be fine. I wouldn't surprise me at all. It's a lot to lose in Antonio Brown, but they could still land on their feet here. They're still a pretty solid foundation there.
You're the best, Frank. Thank you so much, buddy. Enjoy the rest of your week. Have a great vacation.
Yep, no doubt.
All right, buddy. You take care. Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. We'll update you on the SEC. Auburn 46, Missouri 39, 14 minutes and about 40 seconds to go in that one. We know LSU will be taking on Florida tomorrow at noon. We will come on directly after the postgame show of that one. And some final thoughts on LSU, Will Wade, etc. when we return to wrap things up on this Thursday edition of the Jordy Helfrich Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, welcome back. Finishing touches Thursday style. Auburn 49, Missouri 41, 14 minutes and change left to go in this one. We know that Florida beat Arkansas 66-50, so it'll be LSU versus Florida tomorrow at noon. Again, 11:30 pregame show, tip at noon, and we'll go the distance with it, take in the pregame show. We'll hear from interim head coach and Tony Benford, and then we'll pop on board with our show after that. So probably, I don't know, 2:30-ish maybe? We'll miss a half an hour. 2020 recruiting class for LSU lost a commit. Four-star Darren Turner announced he no longer committed to LSU and would be exploring all his options. Wide receiver from Memphis, Tennessee area. So there you go. And the Saints, it is official. They have signed Malcolm Brown to a contract, defensive line, position of need. Yeah, I got to thinking about this Will Wade saying, I deserve to be, I want to be reinstated as the head coach and blah, blah, blah. It really has done absolutely nothing to help the situation. It has done absolutely nothing, in my opinion, to help his chances at being reinstated. It doesn't help LSU. It is dividing LSU from some of its fan base, who are blinded by a coach that's won a lot of ball games, and with, well, everybody else is doing it, why shouldn't we? Well, that's just nonsense. It's nonsense. So there were really zero benefits to LSU as a program and a university in coming out and basically saying, reinstate me. I don't care. I'm not talking to you. I know you said it, but I'm not talking to you. But I have my own civil rights, and reinstate me. Well, that's just, it just is adding fuel to a fire that just won't go away. And it's a tragedy. It's a shame. Hey, Will, if you didn't do anything, just come out and say, I didn't do anything. Come out and say it. If you didn't cheat, come out and say it. Please. I can't wait to hear the uproar if, and as if is the operative word, because as of right here, right now, there is still no word on Javonte Smart. But if he is allowed to play again, I can hear the uproar. Well, they obviously didn't find anything, so why not reinstate Will Wade? What people have to understand is you cannot let the head coach hold you as a prisoner. You are the institution. You must have institutional control in the eyes of the NCAA. And that's what this has all come down to. I do not blame LSU for covering their derriere, because coaches come and coaches go. They do. We loved Nick Saban until he left, and then he became hated. We love Will Wade. Who is to say that Will Wade was going to stay here for a long period of time? Certainly his track record doesn't indicate that, and I'm not blasting Will Wade at all. He has every right to do whatever he wants to do. And if he were to leave and go to Kentucky or UCLA, I would say thank you for what you did for LSU, and you did a great job. But you can't hold a university prisoner of the moment. You just can't. I know he is being advised to do this, and I know that that was written by someone else for him and sent by him. They backed LSU up into a corner, and you back them up long enough, and they're going to fight you back. And that's what LSU's done. And I can promise you, I don't care what side of the fence you're on. Doesn't matter to me. You are all entitled to your opinion. But I can promise you, LSU's going to be around a lot longer than Will Wade. And the basketball program will be around a lot longer than Will Wade. And that's what LSU's approach is. And that's what every institution's approach has to be. Has to be. Yes, other schools do it other ways. And yes, I think the biggest mistake LSU made in this entire scenario was when that Yahoo Sports article came out, they should have sat on it, waited, let LSU play their last regular season game, let Will Wade coach it, and then on Sunday, you call the meeting. But what you did is you ignited an opportunity for a fan base who didn't like your athletic director in the first place to really voice their venom in a public forum that drew a lot of attention around the nation. You call the meeting, there's no 13,000 people screaming. You handle it that way. LSU does some piss poor things. I'm sorry. They do. They do. And they have for a long time. That, I think, was what the first flaw or the first fly in the ointment was all about. It's my opinion. We'll see. No history lesson today. Let's go straight to our birthday wishes. If your birthday is March the 14th, wow, you are joined by quite a group. Happy 85th birthday, Michael Caine, great actor. Happy 70th birthday, Billy Crystal. Happy 21st birthday to gymnast Simone Biles. And happy 31st birthday to the sharpshooter of the Golden State Warriors, Steph Curry. Happy birthday. And happy birthday to all of you. If it's your anniversary, keep adding year after year after year to it. Hope you have a great, great afternoon and evening. CD, job well done. Special thanks to Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated, John Brady live from Nashville for the SEC tournament, Larry Holder talking about the Saints and free agency, and Frank Schwab. Again, LSU, Florida, tomorrow, 11:30 pregame show, 12 o'clock tip right here on 103.7 The Game. And then our show, and then later on that evening, LSU and Kentucky baseball from Alec Box Stadium. It'll be Zach Hess on the mound, Cole Henry on Saturday, and Eric Walker on Sunday. CD, job well done as always. Thanks to all of you for listening in. Thanks to our partners that make it possible each and every day. Happy Pi Day, right? 3.14 something, 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 something. Happy Pi Day. So that means you can get a pizza pie, apple pie, whatever kind of pie. Have a great one. We'll be back tomorrow after the LSU basketball game. So until then, I'm Jordy Helpert. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.